Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. And Jeff, I want to start with this. For years now, here on the Keystone Kickoff Show, we have a tradition of obviously making predictions before a game. We always do that, like everybody else does.
Sure.
In addition, there's one other tradition, which is a bold prediction. And quite candidly, I think they get forgotten as soon as they're put out there.
Right.
Until last week, my friend.
That's right.
And what was your bold prediction last week?
I said those Nittany Lions would go 2-for-2 in field goal attempts versus UCLA.
And what did they do, Jeff?
They went, as I understand it, 2-for-2 in field goal attempts versus UCLA.
And now, everyone has heard this. Last week, I wasn't at the game because I was at a wedding, of course. Everybody knows that. Co-hosts are listeners. Jeff, as soon as that happened, I am at the wedding, and what do I get? A text message from Jeff flexing his muscle.
A little pat on the back. Good job, self, I said. Good job, self.
And you know what, Jeff? What comes to mind for me on this is similar to Vanderbilt in their record against top five teams, I think our bold predictions were about 0-for-60. And now, my friend, we've got a W out there for a bold prediction.
We were due. We were due, baby.
Did you try to take down the goalposts and take it down to the river?
I was trying to take it all the way to Nashville. I wanted to join the celebration there, but yeah, they wouldn't let me anywhere near out here.
Well, kudos, my friend. You, sir, got us off the schneid with your bold prediction a week ago. 2 field goals attempted, 2 field goals made. You must feel pretty good about yourself, just like this Penn State team. Jeff, just final couple thoughts on this UCLA game. And it seems to be becoming a trend that we talk about the Penn State team not covering the spread, not winning the way you might expect, but really in a game that was never in doubt.
And when you start looking around the rest of the country, a less than convincing win looks pretty good compared to, let's say what Tennessee or Alabama fans were dealing with later in the night on Saturday. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, Penn State is taking care of business. I don't know that they've looked as good as you would hope in some ways. I do like the physicality of the offensive and the defensive lines, and I think that does bode well for down the road. But really, this game Saturday against USC is, in the moment at least, kind of the whole ball of wax here for Penn State here in 2024.
It really is. And we're going to get to it, Jeff. We're going to devote at least a full segment to it. I still want to wrap up a couple things with the UCLA game. And by the way, a less than impressive win by Monday when you look around at the rest of the carnage going in college football, it's no longer an unimpressive win. It's merely a win.
So, yep, just win, baby.
Exactly. But a couple takeaways from this game and a couple other trends going on. One of them is this slow start, and it's on both sides of the ball. We've had some listeners send in notes about how the defense doesn't start up until the second half. But I think it's really on, you know, both sides of the ball. And it kind of James Franklin talks about complementary football, and he talks about it helping both sides. I think the slow starts really, it's one side hurting the other. It goes both ways. Why is this going on?
I don't know, and I don't think they know. I will say the encouraging part of it, and yes, you want to get off to better starts, and you would think against certainly an Ohio State and probably even against a USC on the road, you're going to need to get off to a better start. But that being said, the adjustments that the coaches and the players are making in game and certainly at halftime have been very effective, and that is – to me, it would be a bigger concern if you were not putting up points or stopping the opponent in the second half. And Penn State, part of what I think, and I could be wrong here, but I think part of this offense, and maybe it's the same on defense, but I think part of this offense is wanting to see what defenses are doing and giving you, and then figuring out, all right, this is where we want to take advantage of the matchups. This is where we think we can exploit maybe a softer part of the field against this defense. Now, I'm sure they're going in with the idea that, hey, this opening drive is important. Let's come down, get points on the board, get in a rhythm, and all of that. And for whatever reason, and it may be different reasons, different games, but it just has not really clicked the way you would hope it would as a Penn State fan.
Yes, it has the feel of we're trying to be methodical, we're trying to march it down the field, we're trying to establish that we could run on you, run at will, do that. But what I found fascinating, Jeff, was when they were put in a position, and they've done this before, by the way, at the end of the half, 2.5 minutes left, they have to go 75 yards, essentially the length of the field. Oh, we'll just hand it over to Drew Aller. He completes 5 or 6 passes for 72 yards, and they very quickly march down the field and score.
The second and third quarters have been very good quarters for Penn State, the best quarters for this team this season. And I do think part of that is that final 5 minutes of the first half and first 5 minutes of the second half and the emphasis that the head coach and the program puts on that and the importance of it. If you have that opportunity to get points late in a half, build some momentum, and then you come out and seize that momentum in the third quarter, those can be huge difference-making opportunities in a game. And to Penn State's credit, that part has gone very well this season.
And I believe Drew Aller threw 24 passes, which is the most that he has thrown in a game this year, which is not very many, Jeff. And I'm not sure if it's lack of possessions. They, at least so far, have been running the ball to throws about a 2-to-1 ratio. And I guess I'm looking for why that is. Is this just the feeling like, look, we've got two great running backs. Over time, we're going to wear you out. We're going to beat you up. We're going to win the game that way. We don't need Drew Aller to throw more. But I suspect there'll be a game where he's going to have to put up more than 24 passes.
I think that's right. I also do think Penn State, and again, I don't know this either, but I think it is reasonable to think that Penn State looked at last season, what Michigan did to win a national championship, how they went about it, and saw and maybe said to themselves, hey, this is a formula for a national championship. I don't think there's any question that this team up front, both sides, is as physical or more physical certainly than any James Franklin coach team here at Penn State. And I think that is deliberate. I think it is part of the overall game plan for success this season. And I think when you get to crunch time, you get to the playoffs, you get an Ohio State in here in early November, being able to grind out a couple of tough yards is going to be critically important. And I think if that part of the game is working, I think there's a feeling that that's the emphasis, and that as Drew Aller continues to progress, that if and when needed, he's going to be fine. And I think the other encouraging thing in that regard from a Penn State fan's perspective is the emergence of Liam Clifford in that UCLA game as not only a possession receiver, but a guy that kind of helped open up the field downfield. So now you have at least kind of that third guy. And I think Julian Fleming is kind of in there as well as maybe a fourth option to go with Tyler Warren, who is actually probably your number one option. And then you get to the four receivers in the core. And I think Penn State feels like, hey, if a team forces us to do it, we're going to be okay with that. But in the meantime, let's try to get this to a point, this being the running game, where it's not something that is going to be taken away no matter what an opponent does and no matter who the opponent is.
I think that's a very good point, Jeff. And you're right. We've now seen four different receivers have standout games, counting Tyler Warren. Omari Evans has been a home run hitter. We know Trey Wallace. And now Liam Clifford establishing something there. I think that does give defenses something more to think about, that there's more guys who can be the targets. Now, that's at wide receiver. At running back, I was kind of fascinated going into this game when we saw Nick Singleton on the sideline. What would it be like for Catron Allen to get the vast majority of carries? But the fact is, this is not the same team without Nick Singleton on the field.
No, it's not. And there's just a different – he brings a different dynamic. There's no question about that. He's the threat of the home run hit every time he touches the ball is there, and it just changes the way defenses can play. And I think the confidence that this Penn State offense has in what it can accomplish. So it'll be nice, I'm assuming, and it certainly sounds like Nicholas Singleton will be back in the lineup this week, and I think that will be an important component for the Nittany Lions to have in the arsenal when they head out to the Coliseum here.
And it doesn't seem like it's just Nick Singleton, but apparently Anthony Donka is going to be ready to play at right tackle.
Yeah, and this offensive line, we've talked about the depth, and I think Nolan Rucci showed up big on Saturday against UCLA, but no question, you want as many of your first-team guys or to be as close to full strength as you can be for a game like this that it really does feel like just a critical juncture here in the season.
Definitely want all hands on deck and ready to go. All right, Jeff, that is it for quarter number one. I want to talk to you about the carnage that took place last weekend in college football when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galanchi. He is Jeff Byers. It's quarter number two of the show. Jeff, a week ago, going into the games last weekend for college football nationally, it was essentially going to be a ho-hum weekend. Very few top games, if any. I don't know. I think the Texas A&M, Missouri was two top 25 teams. I'm not sure if there was another top 25 matchup. And it just went crazy then.
Crazy is absolutely right. And we know it's a mixed up world when you have Kennedy's endorsing the Republican candidate, when you have Cheney's endorsing the Democratic candidate, and when Vanderbilt is beating Alabama, for crying out loud.
It's a bizarro world.
It truly is. And listen, it was a fun game to watch, and it was one of those things where it didn't feel fluky. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you that if Alabama and Vanderbilt played a couple more times this season, that Vanderbilt would just flat out win every game. But as you're watching that game unfold, and I think more and more people as it went along are like, wait, what's happening? Let me check that out. You could not help but be impressed. I mean, Vanderbilt was matching up and then some at the line of scrimmage. And obviously that quarterback, Diego Pavia, was just sensational and fun to watch. But it was a game where Alabama was having to come back and try to counterpunch Vanderbilt, which just seemed to constantly be throwing the first punch and seemed to have more wallop behind their punches throughout the course of the game. And I think that was the most surprising thing. As I tuned in, I'm like, man, this is great. You kind of knew Alabama was eventually going to win because that's just what Alabama does. But then when Vanderbilt went up by the two scores there, it's like, man, I don't know. Maybe Vanderbilt actually does have a chance. And all credit to that program, because that is obviously the biggest win in that program's history. And rightfully, they celebrated. I think the athletic department happily wrote out the check for $100,000 for the tearing down of the goalposts and lack of field control. But it was just one of those special moments, and there were a bunch of them. I mean, it was a wild, wild Saturday, and Cal was a whisker away from holding off Miami there to make it an even more dramatic, upset-filled Saturday.
Well, one of the things we talked all off season, not just you and I, but overall the conversation was how the transfer portal, along with NIL, was going to make things even more uneven, because a lesser team, you have a star player who establishes himself. Hey, one of the big boys is just going to cherry pick that guy, and it'll make the disparity between the haves and the have-nots even greater. Going a long way here, Jeff, to say, Vanderbilt, you mentioned their quarterback, Diego Pavia, who he's a transfer. And I got to see – I saw him play earlier in the year. I don't know if it was when they played Missouri and I believe lost in overtime, and saw – he was a pretty special player, and he almost did the same thing to Missouri. So – and we saw Bowling Green challenge Penn State, again, with the transfer quarterback. Maybe, just maybe, Jeff, this transfer portal thing is actually leveling the playing field a bit.
Yeah, what is interesting is, I mean, he transferred in. You know, this wasn't like Ohio State or Michigan that he's transferring in from. It was New Mexico State. So it's just interesting how different players sync up with different programs. And again, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I will say this season has caught me off guard and in that regard, because I really – thought, and I still think, I think long-term, this still is going to play out in favor of the big boys, and that separation is going to get wider. But I am second-guessing myself on that for sure after this weekend and seeing what some of these teams are doing. And again, it's sometimes, it's just getting the right guys at the right time and making sure that everything flows. And sometimes it doesn't. And it's just like in professional sports. I mean, you see baseball teams get, high paid free agents who have a proven track record. You get them all together and all right, here we go. We're going to win a World Series. Oops. Nope. First round exit in the playoffs. And sometimes you have a team that, you know, is way out of it, like completely out of it, Jim, at the beginning of June, and then somehow catches fire by bringing up a bunch of young guys, you know, just as a random example of something that theoretically could happen out there, and a team that could make a run like toward the National League Championship Series or, you know, something bizarre like that could happen just theoretically in the world of sports.
Oh, Jeff, you are not so subtly talking about my New York Mets, who I never, never get tired of talking about when they're winning games, Jeff.
Yes, indeed.
When they're losing, let's just move on and change the subject. But yeah, you're right. There's some crazy stuff going on. And just to fill out the rest of that lineup card from the top 10 or actually top 11 teams, I think both the Southeast Conference and Big Ten it was a game-changing weekend. In the Southeast Conference, it was Alabama, Tennessee, and Missouri, all top 10 teams getting knocked off. Now, I'll say it again. I've been saying it. I think Missouri was a fraud, and A&M just exposed them for who they really are.
Yeah.
But you did not expect Tennessee to lose to an Arkansas. And, you know, I've heard some folks say, oh, this is an indicator that the regular season, it truly, these games don't matter that much because if this were a four-team playoff, no, I'll still argue again. It makes them more interesting. And yes, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri could all come back and be playoff teams. But all these teams are still going to be playing each other, Jeff. And I don't think anyone calculated these couple extra losses into the equation for those top teams in the Southeast Conference. So what does this do overall to the conference? Do we now say, hey, the Southeast Conference may not be quite as good as we thought it was, and we're going to continue to see this kind of chaos there?
I do think chaos is the right word, and I think it's going to be difficult for any of those teams to get through the season without two losses. Texas, you know, right now is sitting there undefeated, but they have a brutal stretch coming up here, and we'll see how they are able to navigate it. And it starts with a rivalry game that you would think Texas will be able to take care of business. I think Texas is the better team, but rivalry games are always dangerous. And again, if Vanderbilt can beat Alabama, I certainly think it's within the realm of possibility that Oklahoma can defeat Texas. So yeah, you have to see how it all plays out. The one thing for me, Jim, is I think the just outside of the top 10, there was a game that had a lot of impact here, I think, for Penn State, which was USC's loss to Minnesota, because with the chaos that occurred in the top 10, if USC wins that game by a point, if USC wins that game, it's a top 10 program. They're ranked in the top 10 going into this Saturday's matchup with Penn State. Because they lost by a touchdown, they are not anywhere in the top 25. And I've thought all along, Jim, that if Penn State just gets to 10-2, kind of the established yes. mark that Penn State gets to, they would be a playoff team. I don't think it's a guarantee right now that is the case this season with the way it's playing out. Because I think there's a possibility that if Penn State loses to USC or loses one of the other remaining games along with Ohio State, that the problem Penn State is going to have is the lack of any signature or marquee victory to go with the loss to Ohio State, which is forgivable. But again, whether it's USC or one of the other remaining games, it's going to be a bad loss. To feel confident that Penn State is going to be in the playoffs, I now think the Nittany Lions need to go 11-1 here in the regular season. I think that gets them in, but I do think there's going to be people that will make a legitimate argument against Penn State, even at 11-1, because there's a possibility that among those 11 wins, there will be none against top 25 teams here at season's end for Penn State.
Well, I think, Jeff, the standard has really changed where 11-1, if you're in the Big Ten, Southeast Conference, you're in. You are in. Now, the two losses, I've always been the one arguing that 10-2 was not going to be good enough. Somebody 10-2 was not going to make the playoffs. And part of my argument has always been, prior to the season, I did a projection of the Southeast Conference and found seven teams that would have two losses or fewer. And that's if there were no upsets. Well, the fact is there are upsets. I'm not so sure if now the barrier is going to be a three-loss team, you're not going to make it. Two losses, though, you most likely will. But talking about this, the Big Ten and what has changed here, USC game becomes that much more important for Penn State, I think. Yeah, it kind of would have been nice to say it was a top 10 matchup, but I don't think USC, with their performances and what we've seen from them so far, I think they've got a couple more losses in them, so that by the end of the season, even if it were a top 10 matchup now, I think this just comes down to, for Penn State and most every, just win and survive, win in advance.
I think that's true. I do think that the, by not having them ranked, it takes the luster off immediately from this win. I mean, now winning and even losing at USC, if they were a top 10 team and it was a close game, even if USC struggles later, it's like, in the moment, they're going to stay, Penn State I'm talking about, with a loss, would still stay up there, I think, relatively highly, because, again, you're on the road, top 10 team, not a big deal. Now I think a loss to USC drops them pretty substantially. And then, again, if you lose to Ohio State, and especially if you lose, you know, let's say by a couple of touchdowns or more to the Buckeyes, then I think it becomes a real discussion as to whether or not Penn State at 10-2 is worthy of a playoff spot here in 2024.
Yes, and it will still be a situation where it's happened in prior years. There have been enough two-loss teams that it did not guarantee a top 12 finish. All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Well, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Jeff, a reminder to our audience. Guess what? Big event coming up, Whiteout Weekend. Happy Valley United. They are the Penn State Collective. They are sponsoring a whiteout party Friday night before the whiteout game at the Nittany Lion Inn from 7 to 11 p.m. If you're coming into town, what a great way to kick off the weekend. This whiteout party, again, Nittany Lion Inn. There'll be lots of football lettermen there. If there's an 80s cover band, Velveeta. There's music, dancing, food, open bar. And if you want more information, all you got to do is go to happyvalleyunited.com. There's the events tab. Hit that. You'll see the event, ticket pricing, and everything else that you need for a great event. All right, Jeff, we're talking about the carnage in college football. I want to ask you about something because it's fascinating to me. We've got this Penn State traveling out to USC. In an alternate world out there somewhere, there exists a situation where James Franklin is the head coach of USC. Remember that 3 years ago? It was, I think it was 2021. All the talk. Penn State started the season really well. James Franklin was a big name. The conversation was potential of going out to USC. And I don't think James ever really put the kibosh on that talk, okay? He let it happen. What would the world look like if he did go out there?
Well, for one thing, Jim, then he would not be, I don't think, the head coach of Florida next year as he's going to be now. So, wait, what?
Well, that will be the next question, Jeff. What next year will look like? Let's do one hypothetical at a time. This one is, I suspect there are USC people out there who kind of wish it would have been James Franklin.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Again, we've talked about this. there are good coaches, like really good coaches, who go certain places and it just doesn't work for whatever reason. And it can be a whole host of reasons, whether just not getting along with the athletic director or president of a university, the infrastructure with the in the program when he gets there isn't quite set up and they're not willing to move the way the coach wants. But I also feel like sometimes it just – you can't really explain it. And I probably go back too often to the Scott Frost and Nebraska thing, but I just – that should work. Like, that is a really good football coach. He had great success. He knows the Nebraska culture, knows the Nebraska program. Nebraska desperately wants to win. They want to do everything they can to support him. And for whatever reason, it did not work. So, I mean, my guess is, had James Franklin gone, the interesting part of that to me is, all right, then who is here at Penn State if that had played out that way? Because I think James Franklin would go out and would have some success at USC. I have no idea how much more than Lincoln Riley or exactly what the program would look like, but I think James Franklin would be successful, relatively speaking, wherever he went. It would be interesting if that had happened, and then it certainly would have a whole different feel to this weekend with Penn State and USC now meeting as conference opponents. But it's really hard to, with any kind of authority, envision what that would look like. And again, to me, the more intriguing part would be, all right, well, who did Penn State get in here, and how is that head coach handling all of the world changes that have come to college football, from the transfer portal to the NIL stuff, and now I guess we're not going to have national letters of intent and the whole thing going on with college football. I don't know. To me, could Penn State have gone out and hired somebody that would be as dynamic, more dynamic, meeting the challenge? Possible. I think it's more likely that whoever they hired would be up against it here and struggling to get to 10-2 instead of, again, it's almost a presumption, I think, at this point within the Penn State community that almost worst case scenario, Penn State will end up at 10-2.
And, you know, Jeff, it's interesting. We always, and maybe this is a case of going with the devil you know, and so many schools you have made the change at coach, you would have thought also, you mentioned Scott Frost, which is the great example of what I think all of us thought. That was the perfect fit, Jeff. It was perfect. That was going to work. Nebraska could not have gotten any better a candidate than that. USC bringing in Lincoln Riley, I would think at the time that felt like a home run, Jeff.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, it felt like a home run in every way. And again, it like, I can't sit here and tell you, well, obviously it's not going to work with Lincoln Riley. Like, how are they going to play good defense? Well, they had good defense at Oklahoma. I don't know what you look at and say definitively that something is or isn't going to work. He certainly had the big name, the cachet that comes with that. And I don't rule out the possibility that this eventually works and turns around at USC, but certainly in the moment here, and is it possible Lincoln Riley doesn't get a chance to make this work the way USC fans and he would envision? I would argue definitively yes, because if this season, if USC loses to Penn State here on Saturday and then does lose a couple of more, I just don't know that in this day and age that USC can, I think USC will look at it and say, we maybe can't afford to be patient here. But then it becomes one of those things where you're just constantly chasing your tail here, trying to catch up instead of letting somebody that, again, has a tremendous background get established and try to make a move up. I think no matter who was in charge there, this transition to the Big Ten is going to be a challenge. And I think you're seeing that kind of across the board. I'm really curious to see how this Oregon-Ohio State game turns out on Saturday night, because going into it, I think Ohio State is just a better team, and I think Ohio State will win the line of scrimmage, and that over four quarters, they're going to kind of wear Oregon out.
How big a factor is this, and we've been hearing about it all week, teams in the Big Ten traveling two time zones are 1-8. I think I favor both Penn State and Ohio State both making that kind of trip, Jeff, but I would feel a whole lot more comfortable with Penn State playing USC at home than on the road. So I guess the question still is, how big a deal is it, that kind of travel?
So in my mind, it's not that big of a deal, and I think James Franklin is rightfully downplaying that this week. But I will say, talking to Goon and talking to some other people who have played the game and have made those trips, that it maybe is a little bit bigger deal than what I would make it out to be. Now, I still think it's something you can overcome. I don't think it's such a daunting task that, you just throw up the white flag and lick your wounds and you go on to the next week. But I do think it is a factor. And I like the fact that Penn State went out the day early and left on Thursday to get out to that area, and that they're going to do a couple of practices, a practice and a walkthrough out there to try to get a little acclimated. I also will say I like that it's a 3:30 kickoff Eastern time, because that's even 12:30 out there. I like that a lot more than if it was, you know, a 9 a.m. kickoff out there and 12 noon Eastern time here, or if it was a night game atmosphere and all of that. I think that 3:30 kick is probably, at least to me, the best case scenario as far as a kickoff time when you're making that type of a trip from Penn State's perspective.
Here's what I find fascinating in that, Jeff, is you talked about James Franklin downplaying it. I got just the opposite reaction from it. I mean, it turned into, we need a longer runway here at Penn State. We have to bus it all the way to Harrisburg for the flight. Made a point of saying we're flying out a day early. I listen to national radio shows, the college football, and it was the topic of conversation. So I looked at it the opposite way. And in fact, I almost feel like it's concerning to me that that James Franklin is treating it like it's a big story, which means the players hear it. It's reached national news level. It's a topic. And I will bet you when that game starts, the pregame show and the announcers for the game will talk about it. That's my bold prediction.
Yep. I like that bold prediction. And I think you're right about that. I think at the same time that I do think it is a logistical issue, right, for Penn State getting out there, just as it is for West Coast teams getting here, or for that matter to Maryland or Rutgers or even Ohio State. So it's just one of the pieces of doing business with this expanded Big Ten, and you either make the adjustment like everything else in college football, you either make the adjustment or you get left behind a bit. And I think for Penn State, it's a matter of going out and not letting this be something that prohibits you from going out and playing the way you know you're capable of. I just think Penn State at the end of the day has a better team, but I also think has a better line on both sides of the ball. And generally speaking, in college football, if you have the better offensive line and the better defensive line and you take care of the football, which Penn State has been very good about to this point in the season, I think you're going to come out on top much more often than not. But I do think because it is out there, I'm expecting this to be a closer game than maybe what you would expect when you look at it on paper.
Jeff, you always do this to me. I was anticipating our fourth quarter to be where we preview the game, but you always jump the gun on me. What are we going to talk about now in the fourth quarter with you doing that to me, Jess? Now, there's plenty more to talk about. I just feel like with the whole travel thing, James Franklin has the ability. He's so process oriented and wants to control everything that I think sometimes things that shouldn't be a major deal turn into it because he's examining it. All right, that's it for quarter three. We will continue the USC preview when we get back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. I thought I was the host of the show and in control of the topics. My co-host, Jeff Byers, who is taking command of the topics and moving things right along. Right, Jeff?
I'm making it a longer runway, Jim. I'm making it longer on the spot. And let me also point out for the record, Jim, that I actually don't think the length of the runway matters. I think it's how you use that runway that really is what's important.
We're not talking about airports anymore, are we, Jeff?
What? I thought that's exactly what we were talking about.
All right, can we better move along because we're traveling a path that I'm not sure we want to go. But it is funny. Answer me this, because I'm not sure. I thought I heard, though, that the issue with the runway, if they took a two smaller planes, they could have gone out of state college, and that's what UCLA did. Is that correct?
That is my understanding as well. And, you know, one of the issues is while you certainly understand from a convenience standpoint that having the longer runway would be wonderful, you'd be using that runway exactly once or twice a year. And I don't even think it's going to be for very long that you'd be using it even once or twice a year, because I am convinced that sometime in the fairly near future, like within the next 5 years or so, we're going to go back to a more regional schedule anyway, that this thing is going to get broken up and divvied up to a point where you're going to have an Eastern division of whatever Big Ten or combination conference emerges here, and that Penn State will largely be playing teams in the Northeast and maybe a few in the Midwest. But I don't think this schedule as it is right now is long for the offing myself.
Yes. And if the only reason to extend the runway and whatever that cost would be is to allow the Penn State football team to take one jet out to the West Coast once a year, I don't see that as a big investment, especially if there's an alternative, which is to take two planes, split. I think, Jeff, if you had the opportunity to fly out of state college with two planes, you give up the right to complain about the bus trip to Harrisburg to make the flight when there's another solution to the issue, which is just taking two planes and splitting up the travel party.
I agree, and I'm not exactly sure. I don't know what the cost difference is for a trip like this, and I don't know what all of the logistical issues that come into play here are, but I agree. It seems to me that if that is critically important to you, again, to do it one time a year, you would bite the bullet with the money that's being thrown around here in intercollegiate athletics and, you know, make that additional expenditure, presuming it is an additional expenditure, to make that happen. And if it's not that big of a deal and you want to save the money and well, then that's fine. Then go to Harrisburg and fly out and make that work. But, you know, it's another one of those things, though, too, Jim, that I think it is going to be interesting to hear from different coaches on both coasts, from the four previous Pac-12 members and also especially maybe like the Penn State, Maryland, Rutgers group, in terms of what they find works or doesn't work when it comes to these longer trips. Like UCLA came in here and they didn't get in until I think it was right around 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, and boom, they're playing right away the next day and then they're out of here. And, you know, they lost the game, but I think it was because they were not as good of a football team. They didn't, it certainly didn't appear that it was like tired legs or, man, they just can't get their.
They played pretty well.
Yeah, and, right out of the gate.
And I think if anyone has more of a complaint, I think it's UCLA who's had to make some of these trips. And I believe they made the trip to Hawaii also. So they've had more of these kind of trips going on. And the fact that for their body clock, that was a 9 a.m. start.
Yeah.
So I think UCLA has a lot more to complain about. All right, enough runway talk, Jeff. Let's talk about the game itself again, like you started to in quarter three. And, I think you tipped your hand a little bit where you were headed with this. And I agree with the idea that Penn State, USC has struggled against not just Big Ten teams, but Big Ten style teams, you know, Michigan and Minnesota, who play that tough physical type of game. I think that's the bigger conversation here, because Penn State, as you point out, they've been playing a very physical brand of football, and up front, offensive line, defensive line, and the ability to run the ball, Penn State's probably better at those things than what we've seen from Michigan and Minnesota.
I do think this is a pretty desperate USC team right now. And because they're at home and because of the time zone difference and all of that, the travel for Penn State, those are the concerns for me in this game is how does Penn State kind of handle and adjust to the long trip and the difference in time, and how do they handle a team that I think USC is going to throw absolutely everything they have at the Nittany Lions, because it is a critical game for Penn State, and I've mentioned that a couple of times. If USC loses this game, obviously the very slight opportunity that they have to play their way back into playoff contention is out the window. But I think more than that, it becomes very unlikely that USC, it feels like 7 is the ceiling for victories. I think it's very unlikely that they even get to, kind of the upper half of the Big Ten conference here by the time the season ends. And if that happens, I think there's a chance there are some things imploding in the offseason for this USC program as it tries to make this adjustment to the Big Ten. And so I do think they have a tremendous sense of urgency there, and I think Penn State will get USC's best shot. I think Penn State will be up to the task here and be able to withstand that best shot, because I still think at the end of the day, Penn State has the better team.
I see what you're saying about USC. They are desperate. And again, this is where that 12-team playoff, USC could still dream on a playoff possibility, okay? Win out, you're 10-2 with a Big Ten schedule. You could probably argue you belong in the playoffs. But I also think, I don't want to make it sound like I think USC is going to give up on the season already, but this is a team that has already lost two games early in the Big Ten. They lost to a Minnesota team that nobody envisioned that happen. They did it by getting shut out 2-0 in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. I also wonder, again, not that they'll throw in the towel, but maybe USC kind of looks around and wonders, maybe we just aren't that good.
Well, this is where I think if Penn State is going to get off to a good start in a game this season, this would be an excellent chance to capitalize on that, because I'm with you in that while I think there's that sense of urgency, I also think if Penn State can jump out early, and especially if they can get a 2-score lead somewhere in that first half, I think, one, the fans there are ready to turn on Lincoln Riley, certainly in the program in general. And I also think then you're right that they start looking at each other on the sideline. It's like, I don't think we're that good. We might not be up to the challenge here. And I think if Penn State jumps out early, it is really hard for me, at least, to envision the scenario where USC then comes back and wins this game. I don't think it's not hard for me to envision if Penn State falls behind early 10-0, let's say, I don't think there's going to be any sense of panic, and you're still going to feel like, okay, we've done this before. We know what to do at halftime, and let's come out and take control of the game. And USC, as you pointed out, has faded a bit here, with the exception of that Wisconsin game. And again, I attribute that more to Wisconsin being really down. And again, if USC was any kind of a contender, I just don't think that's a game that should have been as close as it was at halftime.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. And I know a lot of people are really hanging their hat on this travel issue as the reason why to have faith in USC. I just think that Penn State is that much better than USC. If this were a home game, I would just be counting it as a win. Yeah, it's a big game for Penn State. Yes, they are going to the West Coast, but I'm in agreement with you, Jeff, especially up front, both lines of scrimmage. I think Penn State's the better team. I think that we've seen the model from Michigan and Minnesota, how you could bully USC. And I think Penn State's in a great position to do that. All right, Jeff, you got a minute and a half. I need not only your prediction, but you're on a streak now. One in a row on your bold predictions.
Red
we
hot.
Need to hear that also. Red hot indeed.
Yeah, I do think Penn State, I think this is going to be a tight game at halftime. You know, maybe like 13-10 Penn State, 14-10 Penn State at halftime. I do think as the second half wears on, Penn State will start to assert itself. And at the end of the day, I have it Penn State, and now I'm trying to remember my prediction, 31, USC 16, 31-16.
And your bold prediction?
My bold prediction is Ryan Barker will go 3 for – no, I'm just kidding. Field goals, my prediction every week. I will say Nicholas Singleton comes back to that lineup with a vengeance and scores 3 touchdowns. Not saying they'll all be rushing, but he scores 3 touchdowns against the Trojans here in Saturday's game.
That is bold. Well, Jeff, it's interesting. You go with 31-16. I had it 31-20, the Nittany Lions. So we're of like mind there. So it's got to happen. It seems like it's an absolute then. Penn State will score 31 points. If you and I say it, it's got to be. All right, Jeff, thank you very much. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.